Come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Elaine Bowen, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Lily Rappaport, and our music director, Hal Walker. I'm also grateful for Jeff Marsh, who's participating in our service this morning. Will you please join in reading the words for our chalice lighting today, which are printed in your order of service? The International Council of Unitarian Universalists invites a Unitarian Universalist community around the world each month to submit what is called a global chalice lighting, and this is the one chosen for September. May this light be a beacon of love, hope, and peace all over the world.
How do you remember learning about the American Dream? Was it mentioned at home? At school? Who brought it up and how? Do you remember the context? I ruminated on this question for a bit until I realized it was not an overt lesson, but rather what I assimilated from the culture in which I was raised. My parents were both school teachers, although my father had begun his career as a sheet metal worker alongside my grandfather. It was assumed, yet unspoken for many years, that my two older sisters and I would certainly go to college. That was just how it was going to be. That was our path. I can recall negative undertones in hearing my father, in particular, dismissively talk about people who did jobs like trash collecting, gas station attendants when they still had them, dishwashers, restaurant servers, mechanics, service jobs, what you might call blue-collar jobs. You see, people in low-paying jobs did not own their own homes, but rather lived in tenements or the projects. They did not own new cars, but junkers and clunkers. The message I heard subliminally was, "Not my children. They are better than that. Better than service jobs, better than tenements, better than used cars or public transportation." What I heard was, "You are better because you are white, middle class, and your family are professionals." I couldn't put words to it then, but in retrospect, I can now. What it was, what it is privilege and classism, plain, simple, and ugly. It makes me pause. It makes me wonder how all of this background of mine influenced both my understanding and my misunderstanding of the American Dream. Come, let us worship together.
Good morning. My name is Lily Rappaport, the Director of Religious Education. And I've got this wonderful, amazing, beautifully gift-wrapped box called the Wonder Box. And I wonder what's in it. Does anyone want to take any guesses? Yeah? I don't know either. So I could use some volunteers. Can I have 7 people coming up to the front to help me with this? Yes. Come on. I don't know. You can come up here too. Okay. I just need 7. All right. Wonderful. All right. You can all help. So what's in there?
Okay. There are several cards.
All right, before you look. So I'm going to take this off. Oh, look. Wow. There's a basket. And I see there are some ribbons. So I'm going to need 7 people to hold these ribbons. Who can read?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Here we go. Can you read that one? All right, come up here. Each person is important. Be kind in all you do.
We're free to learn together.
We're free to learn together.
We're free to search what is true.
We're free to search for what is true. Okay, it says, somebody want to help? All people... That's wonderful. Yes, beautiful. All people have a voice. And this is a long one. We should help build a free, peaceful, fair, and free world.
I can't.
You can't read that? Okay. We believe in caring for our planet. So what do you think our story is going to be about today?
I don't know what it's talking about.
Okay, all right. Well, these are all, what do we call these? Seven... UU principles, right? Do you think that we might be talking about the seven UU principles? Okay, yeah. Well, today we're actually going to talk about a covenant.
What's a covenant?
What is a covenant? That's a really good question. A covenant is a promise that we make to one another. And keeping these promises keep us together as a family or as a friends or as a Unitarian Universalist congregation. Yes, being in covenant, keeping these promises together. So today, we're actually going to keep these covenants together. All right. We'll start with this one. And we're going to make, what is this? A chain. Can you hold this for me? And show everybody what you're holding. All right. And let's make a chain like this. Can you hold it up? There we go. Yes. So we got two of them. You hold this?
I can hold it.
You can hold it. Okay. So we're going to tape all of these seven principles. That's it. And you add the other chain. All right.
What's a chain?
What we're making right now. Yes. So we have another one.
I can hold it.
You can hold it? And do we have other principles here? What is the principle? A principle is someone who can teach you how to listen. That's good, right. And it's also a principle are the promises that we make to each other. These seven principles are the promises that we keep, that we promise to keep together because we are all a part of a covenant. And another way that you can see covenant is when you look around you and you see all the people that are around you, people who are playing together, who are learning together, and who are being safe and fair with each other. So when you're seeing all this happening, it's an invisible way to see a covenant. And a covenant is a gift that we give to each other. So today, we're making a covenant, as you can see in this chain. And we're all making promises. And each of you have your own link to the chain that will ask you to write down your covenant, write down the promises that you will make to this community. And we'll collect it in this lovely basket, and we'll make one long chain that we can show to everybody, okay? Thank you.
To lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer, these words from Meg Riley, who is the senior minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Larger Fellowship, words crafted in honor of Labor Day. Here's to all who resist assimilation, resist co-optation, resist oppression, resist ignorance, resist consumerism, resist the certainty of others' diagnoses. Resist complacency. Resist numbing out. Resist the same old, same old. Resist being taken advantage of. Resist the hissed whisper to be quiet, to settle down. Resist what is given, and instead create what is needed.
Here's to all who create. Create new stories with new life springing forth. Create laughter and tears. Create gardens and delicious meals from them. Create music and its deep companionship. Create relationships that defy labels. Create deep roots. Create beauty. Create courageous actions. Create what will carry us to a new day.
Here's to the new day. May it dawn bright for all, condemning none to nightmares. May it bring hope grounded in reason to hope. May it bring evidence for hearts to trust that love is real. May it bring joy and the simple abundance of enough. Here's to Labor Day. To the humble, imperfect work of us all, seen and unseen, paid and unpaid, respected and unrespected. Here's to our real work together. Together, let us keep silence for a moment. In the clear beauty of this day we have been given, set aside that which is on your hands and in your mind and open your heart to what you find here.
I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. To be honest, we often do not know which choice is the right one. To be honest, the problems of the world are so complex, understanding is often elusive. To be honest, the burdens of trying to understand can often feel like an enormous weight. To be honest, sometimes we grow weary. So let this be a moment of rest. Let this be a moment of grace. Let this be a moment of gratitude. Without needing to know or diagnose or declare, let us simply rest now in open-hearted appreciation for the beauty and wonder and mystery of life with which we have been blessed. Amen. Disclaimer number one. Unitarian Universalists support the separation of church and state. We oppose the creation of policy or law based upon the teaching of any one religious tradition. However, in opposing the establishment of religion, we do not cede our right to critique the state from our religious point of view. As I see it, the state must not privilege any religious tradition, but any religious individual is free to judge the actions of the state through our own moral lens. That's why people on the religious right and the religious left so often show up to protests visibly identifying as religious people. I often wear my stole and occasionally even a collar when I go to protest or public witness events. I go to such events visibly identified as clergy in order to try to influence the public debate about important social issues that matter to me. By being visibly identified as clergy, I hope to communicate that my conscience has been informed by my faith tradition. Disclaimer number two. This sermon is not a statement against Donald Trump. It is not. Nor it is a statement about presidential politics, though on the campaign trail is where I need to begin. Throughout his campaign, Donald Trump has repeatedly proclaimed that the American dream is dead, and his message has resonated with millions of people. 10.7 million people voted for him in the primaries. According to the analysis done by the Pew Research Center, the demographic groups among which Trump is most competitive are older white men without college degrees. Thinking for just a moment about the kinds of jobs that older white men without college degrees have historically relied upon to make a living, it isn't at all difficult to see why Trump's pronouncements about the death of the American dream resonate with his supporters. The promise of the American dream is the promise of opportunity. That phrase was first coined in 1931 by an historian named James Truslow Adams in his book, The Epic of America. He said that the American dream is not about striving for wealth, it's about fulfillment. It's not just about cars and high wages, he writes, but a dream of a social order in which each person shall be able to attain the fullest stature of which they are innately capable, regardless of the fortuitous circumstances of birth. These ideas clearly grow out of the statement in the Declaration of Independence, promising that all men are created equal and endowed with certain inalienable rights, including among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The American dream is a promise, and millions of Trump supporters believe that that promise has been broken. Promise is another word for covenant. And so as we begin exploring covenant in our worship together this month, I would like to invite us to think today about the covenant or the promise that this country has made with its people. The American dream is a promise. Has it been broken? The larger truth, I believe, is that it has never been fulfilled. It has never been made whole. From the very beginning, there were people outside of the circle, people to whom the promises in the Declaration did not apply, including Native Americans, enslaved and indentured people of both African and European descent, women. The promise of equality is a beautiful dream, but
there's never been equality for me, nor freedom in this homeland of the free. Say, who are you that mumbles in the dark? And who are you that draws your veil across the stars? I am the poor white, fooled and pushed apart. I am the Negro bearing slavery's scars. I am the red man driven from the land. I am the immigrant clutching the hope I seek. and finding only the same old stupid plan of dog eat dog, of mighty crush the weak. I am the young man, full of strength and hope, tangled in that ancient endless chain of profit, power, gain, of grab the land, of grab the gold, of grab the ways of satisfying need, of work the men, of take the pay, of owning everything for one's own greed. I am the farmer, bondsman to the soil. I am the worker sold to the machine. I am the Negro, servant to you all. I am the people, humble, hungry, mean. Hungry yet today, despite the dream, beaten yet today, O pioneers. I am the man who never got ahead, the poorest worker bartered through the years. Yet I'm the one who dreamt our basic dream. In the old world, while still a serf of kings, who dreamt a dream so strong, so brave, so true, that even yet its mighty daring sings in every brick and stone, in every furrow turned, that's made America the land it has become. Oh, I'm the man who sailed those early seas in search of what I meant to be my home, for I'm the one who left dark Ireland's shore and Poland's plain, and England's grassy lee, and torn from Black Africa's strand I came to build a homeland of the free. The free? Who said the free? Not me.
That's excerpted from Let America Be America Again, by Langston Hughes, one of the best love poets of the Harlem Renaissance. It's a beautiful dream, but the dream has never been equally accessible to the people of this land. When the Declaration of Independence was signed, freedom and equality were explicitly not available to people of color, or women, or even to white men who did not own property. In the history of the acquisition of voting rights in our country, that last restriction about property ownership was dropped first, thanks in large measure to the privileges enshrined in the social construction of whiteness. The history of whiteness is its own complex story, which is intricately interwoven with the history of immigration and of social class. Still, it's fair to say that white men of all social classes benefited first and more often than white women, who still also benefited from the privileges of whiteness. White people have historically had more access to the promise of the American dream than people of color, for whom the road to greater freedom and equality has been long, treacherous, and deadly. Thanks to the resistance of so many freedom fighters over the ages, enormous gains have been made. Meanwhile, the steady erosion of good jobs for willing workers without a college education has left many people feeling like the promise of the American dream is like a rug that has been pulled out from underneath them. Last summer, The Atlantic magazine conducted a poll with the Aspen Institute about the American dream. They found that white Americans under the age of 30 and near retirement age said in 4 out of 5 instances that the American dream is suffering. Trump places the blame for this trouble alternately on immigrants and Muslims. The rhetoric he uses is fueling an outpouring of hate, which is causing real damage to real people who are already vulnerable. In addition, he often blames bad trade deals and the liberal elite, while his white supremacist supporters, including the former KKK leader David Duke, blame the activism of people of color. The backlash against the activism of the NFL player Colin Kaepernick is just one example. I said recently from this pulpit that the way of the world we live in today means innocence is no longer possible. So whether you pay any attention to football or not, If you've been anywhere near a news broadcast or any kind of social media lately, you have had to wrestle with the idea that our national anthem is racist. And this is painful, and for many, shocking. But I believe that wrestling with these kinds of uncoverings of the truth of history is part of what it takes to travel the path to greater freedom and equality. We need to be willing to hear when a group of people testify to their experience. We need to be willing to hear people of color talk about racism. We need to be willing to hear women talk about sexism. We need to be willing to hear Muslims talk about Islamophobia. And we need to be willing to hear poor and working class people talk about economic injustice. It is all connected. Every form of injustice and inequality is connected, and I sincerely and deeply believe that liberation is connected too. Blaming one group for the problems of another will solve nothing. Part of the work of liberation is learning to build bridges of connection and understanding between our divisions.
That dream shall have a name, after all, and it will not be vengeful, but wealthy with love and compassion and knowledge. And it will rise in this heart, which is our America. From Simon Ortiz, who is an Acoma Pueblo Indian and a leading figure in the Native American literary renaissance that emerged in the 1960s.
The Reverend Jackie Lewis is the senior minister of the Middle Collegiate Church in New York City, which is a large, beautiful, thriving, multiracial, multicultural congregation. And she's also the founder of the Revolutionary Love Conference, which she hosts every year to teach people of faith how to create multiracial, multicultural coalitions of love in the pursuit of justice. She says that worship is an opportunity to rehearse the world for which we yearn. I think that's a beautiful statement of what it is we do here Sunday after Sunday. Worship is an opportunity to rehearse the world for which we yearn. She says worship heals our souls so we can hear the world. Worship heals our souls so we can heal the world. In talking so explicitly today about race and class and other forms of injustice in our world today, my hope is to create a little room for healing. I'm truly not trying to make a partisan statement by saying that this presidential campaign has been especially hard on vulnerable people. Trump's speech has served to shine a spotlight on the strength of enduring systems of oppression, and the consequences have been real and harmful for so many people. I saw a cartoon recently on social media created by a French Muslim woman about how to respond to Islamophobia. It's a very simple cartoon. In four steps, she suggests that if you are a bystander and you see somebody harassing someone who is a Muslim, the best thing that you can do in four simple steps is to make eye contact with the target of the harassment, move in and make small talk about any little thing, the weather, something they're wearing, what you ate that day, and then stand next to the person and engage them in conversation and completely ignore the person who is doing the harassing. Try to deepen the conversation with the person who is the target of the harassment and avoid giving any eye contact or any kind of attention to the person doing the harassing until they leave, and then escort the victim of the harassment to a safe place. She wrote this cartoon because she feels that people need practical knowledge about what to do, how to intervene in the face of hate. The harassment of people who are Muslim or who are mistakenly identified as Muslim, the harassment of immigrants from all parts of the world has been increasing as a result of the damaging, hateful, destructive rhetoric of this campaign. Which isn't to say that the suffering of people, mostly white, mostly working class, who resonate with that rhetoric isn't also real. Both of these things are true. And part of our struggle is to figure out how to witness to the fullness of that truth. And then to determine what we can do to take steps, little steps in our own life, in our own everyday world, closer and closer to freedom and equality for all people. Because none of us created these systems. By being born in this country or living here for any period of time, we become socialized into the realities of systems of oppression. And especially for those of us who were born here, we were socialized into them before we had any opportunity to evaluate them. And so it is not our fault. We are not to blame for the legacies of oppression which plague our world today. However, once we understand them, once we understand how wrong they are, we are responsible for figuring out how to resist them. We didn't create inequity, but once we understand that it exists, we're responsible for living in a way that counters its grip on our collective lives. I want to live in a world in which all people truly are free to develop their potential to their greatest capacity, no matter who they are or where they were born or the body they live in or what religion they profess or what language they speak or who they love. My dream is not just an American dream, though I'll start here. My dream is a human dream, and I know that I won't live a long enough life to see it realized. But I also can think of few things more worthy than working toward the beauty of that dream in my own small efforts to learn and grow and shape my tiny corner of the world. Worship is an opportunity for us to rehearse for the world that we yearn. Today is a beautiful day to rehearse. Let us practice together.
In my America, I see a nation living together under equal skies. Father and mother, sister and brother, we are the apple of freedom's eye. In my America, in my America, in my America, I see a rainbow. Every living color of a living tribe, from coast to coast, from the mountain to the river, we are many colors and we're ready to fly. In my America, in my America, in my America, I see a garden growing with the wonder of a thousand years. Maybe when the flowers in the garden are ready, they'll rise to the beauty and bring no fear. Oh, in my America, in my America, my country, how blessed I'm to know you. I'm wondering how best I can show you. How can I be true to this vision, which calls me to honor my nation? In my America, I have a vision of wisdom being born while hatred dies. Long live the Yankee, the patriot rebel. We are every one of us American pie. In my America, in my America, in my America.
Our closing words this morning are from the African American poet and author Maya Angelou. Please rise in body or in spirit. We're going to do this just a little bit differently today. I'm going to read it first, and I ask you to close your eyes and feel. Feel the words wash through you the second time we will do it together. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. But if faced with courage, need not be lived again. Lift up your eyes upon the day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. History, join in. History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. But if faced with courage, need not be lived again. Lift up your eyes upon the day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream.
With joy and energy, let us go forth, centered once again in our deepest commitments and the courage to live them as imperfectly and beautifully as we can. Go in peace.
Amen.